bells were ringing on a moonlight winter's night, and the church was decorated. All within was gay and bright. A mother with her baby came and saw the lights aglow. She thought how these same bells chimed out for her 3 years ago. "I'd like to be admitted, sir," she told the sexton old, "just for the sake of baby, to protect him from the cold." He told her that the wedding there was for the rich and the grand, and with the eager watching crowd outside, she'd have to stand. While the wedding bells were ringing, while the bride and groom were there, marching up the aisle together while the organ pealed on air, telling tales of fond affection, vowing nevermore to part, just another fatal wedding, just another broken heart. She begged the sexton once again to let her pass inside. "For baby's sake, you may step in," the gray-haired man replied. "If anyone knows reason why this couple should not wed, speak now or hold your peace forever." Soon the preacher said, I must object," the woman cried in voice so meek and mild. "That bridegroom is my husband, sir, and this our little child." "What proof have you?" the preacher said. "My infant," she replied. She raised the babe, then knelt to pray. The little one had died. The parents of the bride then took the outcast by the arm. "We'll care for you through life," they said. "You saved our child from harm." The parents, bride and outcast wife, then quickly drove away. The bridegroom died by his own hand before the break of day. No wedding feast was spread that night. Two graves were dug next day, one for the darling baby, and in one the father lay. The story, it has oft been told by firesides warm and bright, of parents, bride, and outcast wife, and a fatal wedding night. Number two, please. Two, please. All together now. Yes, and so tonight we take up the cudgels for honest, rich, ripe, sound sentimentality. Is there a man tonight with soul so dead whose eye does not water at the sight of an infant babe being held in the arms of a stripling girl? Yes, who does not feel that deep, warm, heavy, rich flow of human spirit go through? Well, bring it up there. Be careful now. You're dealing with dynamite here. Holy smokes. You want to hear more of that? All right, I'll tell you. One of my favorite ones, if you'll fix it up for me, Al. Hey, Al. On that same disc there, get me Song of the Islands. That's even worse. I can do that one. I know that one. I'm going to tell you a terrible secret out of my past. Any of you want to know a real awful secret? I don't generally tell this awful secret. There was one time when I was eking out a somewhat dishonest dollar while I was going to school, playing the bass in very dishonest bands. Oh, you should have. I was one of the worst bass players, and I played in one of the worst bands, all kinds of terrible bands. You know, I was that kind of a bass player. I'd spin my bass around, you know, that kind of thing. And then all bass players, when I worked in these terrible bands, all these bass players had, if you were either a bass player or a drummer or a guitarist, You had to justify yourself in other ways other than to play the bass or the guitar or the drums. And so about every fourth number, the band leader would say, "And now our ever popular bass player, old Sully Murphy, will step up to the microphone and give you his version of a scat singer singing in a big time jazz band, which he likes to believe that he is singing in." And he will sing, "Pa pa to tee ta ta ta." All right, all together now, okay? That lovely song that many of you have sung and danced to for years and years and years now. We are taking you now down Melody Lane on the Melody Trail by way of Memory Song. Yes, the song of the islands. Come on, get on the thing there, you guys. It's terrible. No, oh, even worse than that. Now, do you have somewhere in there? Come on, up. Okay, you get hung on the papers there. Look on. Hold up what we have in abeyance there. I'll do one of these things. This is, yeah. All right, that's all you've got. No, I know you've got more. No, you've got more than that. That's it. All together. I have to eke them up one at a time and say, now that one, the next one. Now, all right. Now, I'll tell you. I'm one of those. You will find. I'm just wild about Harry. You got it in there? All right, let's that one, and there's another one that I am particularly good at that I've worked on for a long time. We'll get this. And this is more of the way it went. See, when something like this, we had a special machine to provide feet. Hey, listen. Hold it. Stop it there, man. Hold. Put your hand right on that, Al. That just reminded me of something here. That I could not put this out of my mind. I will award you the brass figligy with bronze oak leaf clusters, completely for meritorious listening above and beyond the ordinary muck and mire that the listener lives in, okay? Rising above that ordinary nothing level that we all, you know, just, all right, you will get the brass figligy with bronze oak leaf pump if you can tell me what radio show this insane part right here, this little bridge they're playing here, this little piece there, this part, if you can tell me what radio show this... Come on, now. There was a radio show that played nothing but music, and the band played exactly like this. Click. With the xylophone going. Oh, what a terrible show that was. Speaking of terrible shows, this is WOR, AM and FM, New Yorkie, and we'll be here for a while. Oh, yes, here, let's get on with these commercials. We got commercials here. First of all, we have a commercial for Mr. Tony, and they have some, they sell suits, and here's what they say. Let's see. Their suits sell for $69.95 and $79.95 and should be compared with any present-day suit selling for $120. Personal patterns made, suits individually cut, hand-basted try-ons. It reminds me of hand-tailored to measure, styled by DiVenzio Leboni of Milano. Over 3,000 luxurious fabrics from the finest mills of Europe and America. Every jacket uses 32 hand-tailor operations, hand-set colors. Every trouser is handmade. Handmade buttonholes. Handmade sport coats, $47.95. Handmade slacks, $21.95. And let's see, where is Tony? Tony's stores are located at 120 West 37th Street in NYC, 3053 Steinway Street in Astoria, Queens, and 2087 Coney Island Avenue, Brooklyn. Okay. All right, that's Mr. Tony there. Mr. Tony! This is one of those. Oh, let's get. We have another commercial here, and it says, "If I could have some soft music behind me, please." We don't have any. A vacation is supposed to be a time to relax. That's why it's a good idea to fly Pan Am if your vacation plans include a trip to Europa. You see, Pan Am, and only Pan Am, flies straight through to 26 cities in Europe, so that you and your luggage never have to change planes. Think of the worry that saves you, to say nothing of the legwork. Very few people on Pan Am have to walk to 26 cities in Europe. What's more, Pan Am, and only Pan Am, will have 76 jet flights from New York to Europe. Oh, my. Anyway, the whole thing is, it all boils down to one thing. You better take the Pan Am jets. They're very good. See your travel agent. It's okay, I don't know why they have to sell it. Pan Am is all right. Oh my! The world of course. If you want to really pursue the problem of these ancient radio shows and the terrible things that were done on them, I think that most of us will have to. No, I'll tell you what you do, Al. When you put that aside, and yes, keep that up. Keep that up there. Keep that up. I think what we want now is the British. Get the British up there. British up there. Get it set up there while we prepare here. You know, speaking of the pop world that radio is, by the pop world, I don't mean that radio's popular. It's part of the pop art world. Did anyone recognize that show? That's right. They recognized that it was one of the world's worst programs. Put that back up again, Al. I'll do the opening of that get that other that thing that we played there. I'm just wild about Harry. Put it up and get the guy with the xylophone. Go ahead. There's a reason for a text. Don't look at me like that. No, it's a terrible radio show. It came out of New York City, and we used to sit in Hammond, Indiana, and listen to it. That's it. You got it there, man. All right, bring it up now. They have this. All right, bring it up now. Now watch it. But come on now. And now, ladies and gentlemen, direct from the heart of New York City, the program that brings you Manhattan Merry-Go-Round with B.A. Rolfe and his orchestra, and the tunes played so clearly and so cleanly that you can understand each and every word. I'll give you the brass figligy if you can tell me who sang on that show. The featured singer on the show, who was famous for one thing. The singer sang the words so clearly that you could understand each and every word. That's the way the announcer... Who was the announcer? He had a quavery voice. No, B.A. Rolfe was not the announcer. No, B.A. Rolfe was a silent operator of the band. And the announcer, he was a famous announcer, and he had a quavery voice, the Manhattan Merry-Go-Round. And he would say things like, each and every word sung so clearly that you can understand them. The Manhattan Merry-Go-Round. Whoa! And the orchestra of B.A. Rolfe. Who was the singer? There were two singers, actually, on that show. Nope. No, come on. Now, you're being unkind in there. This is a, This is all the people who sang on that show, and all the people who played on the show had a very quavery quality to them. This was back in the days of true pop. It was when the country was in the heart of its Deanna Durbin syndrome. It was when Jeanette McDonald was and Nelson Eddy were making the scene very big, and it was a kind of a pseudo serious pop art. Every movie of that period, no matter what you were doing, if you had a rotten gangster picture and Peter Lorre was chasing somebody around, in the middle of it all, they would run somehow into a studio, and there would be one of the pop pseudo serious performers of the day. Jose Iturbe was in all the movies. And Jose Iturbe was always saying to a girl, "Well, I think you have talents. What did you say your name was? Gloria de Haven?" And she would say, "Yes." And they would "Come, little girl, we will have an audition. You are." And then the next thing you know, you'd see this fantastic movie star. You know the whole thing. In the middle of the gangster pictures. Because everybody was worried in those days that they weren't intellectual and they weren't making it right. And so in the middle of every radio show would come on the popular Jan Pierce-type tenor who would sing selections from The Chocolate Soldier. And everybody in the Midwest, immediately their head would start to buzz. And they all pretended they liked it. Now, that's the thing you gotta remember. Everyone would sit there and would marvel over how Deanna Durbin hit a high note. And, of course, all the notes in between, all of them were very bad, and she was not hitting the same high note that the orchestra was hitting, but it was a very exciting thing. She could shatter glasses and everything. And Edgar Bergen was in all those movies, too. I don't know how Edgar Bergen would get in the movies with Deanna Durbin, but... and it was kind of a pop world. Don't lose that xylophone there. We just one more shot of the xylophone and then we'll leave you. The xylophone, of course, it was 18 million kids were taking xylophone lessons in those days, and marimba lessons and Hawaiian guitar lessons were all part of that great general mass movement towards... Here he goes. I'm just wild about Harry. And now the Manhattan merry go round with the orchestra under the direction of B.A. Rolfe. The Manhattan merry go round features melodies sung so clearly you can understand each and every word. And you guys think rock and roll is rotten. Good heavens. Well, let's get back to the thing. It got completely out of hand tonight. I don't know what I'm doing here. I started out with a program, and I wind up tap dancing and blowing my nose and yelling and head thumping. The next thing you know, I'll be doing some head thumping. Is anyone out there like head thumping? Well, No, we've got to stick to the serious things. You know, speaking of serious things, I think you can really tell a great deal about our civilization, about things like radio and television. You listen to radio and you listen to TV. You'll get more about what it really is like and what people really think and, you know, the kind of chowder heads we really are than you ever will by listening to the serious guys. You know, you listen to serious Sunday afternoon shows and there's a serious reverend and he's talking to Bill Leonard and Bill Leonard is being very serious about the integration problem and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, everyone likes to think that this is what it really is. No, I'd say any given Wednesday, tune across the dial, that's the way it is. That really is the way it is. That's what it's... sure. Believe me, all those very serious guys, the only time they're really serious is when they're all sitting around the Playboy Club and they got all their keys out. That's serious. Now, that really is serious. That's that. Speaking of the serious, I would like to report something that has to be reported here at this point. Somebody sent me a copy of a French magazine, and it's one of these big, beautiful 27-color magazines, and they really go for beautiful reproductions and stuff in these European magazines. And here is an ad, a full-page ad, Al, and it shows this beautiful, lovely French model, a girl. You know, she's a full-face picture of her, and you see a hand coming in from the edge of the picture, handing her it's a bar of chocolate, and it's a beautiful colored ad. And you see this male hand, it's got a wristwatch, and he's handing her chocolate. And she is very delicately reaching out, and she's nipping at it. You know, she's going to bite the chocolate bar. And you see her beautiful pearly teeth there, except for one thing. One of them has a great big fat gold filling in it. And she's biting a bar of chocolate. Now, I think this is a very remarkable example of the new growing wave of genuine honesty in the ads. I mean, a chocolate eater has got a big, giant filling. Obviously, the chocolate has done its work. Well, that's very nice. I'd like to see more of this. Can you imagine the great ads? Shows a guy standing next to his brand new Chevy Caravelle or whatever it is called, and the trunk's bashed in. And he's just getting in and says, "Yes, there goes Mr. his brand new Chevy Mark II, ready to go out on the highway and fly." Boom! He backs up. Boom! He hits the guy ahead of him. Out he goes, a New York driver, merely driving his new Chevy the way they drive him. Great piece of realistic advertising. Hey, have you noticed that the roads that the people drive on in the automobile commercials don't look like any road you've ever driven on? There's no old rotten beer cans and cigar butts and you know all the junk you see on the roads? The real roads, never. Now, I have another suggestion. Can you imagine a guy getting into his new Cadillac, see? And we're bringing out the realism and truth in advertising. He's getting into his new Cadillac, and he's just, you know, one of those casual things which shows him getting in. You can see that there's a lot of dust on the back of the car, and, you know, it's been raining on. And somebody has written one of those things they always write in the dust on the back of the car at the parking lot. You know, just a little leap of life there. Between it comes out there, you know. Oh, boy. Somehow you'd love the Cadillac more than that. I would love to see an ad of a guy handing you a cigarette, and it dollies back to show that he's in a hospital bed. And he says, "Here, have a filter dip." A lot of truth could come out in ads about the real way it is, you know, but it really, really tell the truth. Now, have you noticed those commercials where Jane Withers, have you noticed Jane Withers is now doing commercials? She's the lady plumber. Well, Jane, did you know that's Jane Withers? Well, Jane Withers is always coming in, and she just puts this stuff in the sink and it just clears it right up. Well, I would like to have just a little realism in the commercial. You know, she says, "No, there's no problem here. You don't need a new sink." You know, she talks like this. "You don't need a new sink. No. Here. Now watch this. You just put in the magic whoopee out. Wow." And she pours it in. She goes, and it doesn't come off. "Well, no. And we dolly on out. She's still scrubbing away, and the spot is getting bigger. Which is really what happens to me every time I use any cleanser that's supposed to take a spot out. Let me tell you, one time I had a spot on my knee, on my pants. I had a beautiful olive green suit, which was the pride of my life. I had worn it twice. Well, I got this little ink spot. You know, I'm one of these guys that has little ink pens. I like to draw things. And so I got a little ink spot, roughly the size of about a half of an aspirin tablet, a little round one, see, on my left knee. Well, I'm here at the office. Somebody says, "Well, why don't you go out and get Magic Whoopee?" And he tells me about this great cleaning thing, you know. And he says, "The bottle comes with the top, and there's a little thing on the top, and you just go, chick, a little spot remover." And he says, no reason to send it to the cleaner, you know, do it. So guess who goes down to the drugstore and goes about 9 drugstores till I finally find this magic elixir? So I get the magic elixir. Well, I come back up to my office, and it reads on the back, it says, "Brush on your on the fabric very lightly." It says, "Do it very lightly, just do back and forth in a circular motion, very lightly, and then blot it," and so on. So I sit down at my swivel chair and I start to blot. I go, you know, this magic elixir. Well, I pull back in and I see the spot is now the size of a full aspirin tablet, and it's getting bigger. So, well, I guess what it does is kind of, so I go, it's now the size of a nickel. Well, about 45 minutes later, I am working all the way around to the seat. My spot is now over 3.5 feet wide and 16 inches long and getting wider all the time. You know, I see. Well, the magic elixir. Incidentally, this outfit still advertises on television all over the place. They don't show you this happening. Well, I get that, and the ink is washable ink. I had been taking in on that in the first place. You know, they said, washable. Have you ever tried to wash washable ink out of anything? Well, washplank. So I finally, 3 days later, I wind up over at my friendly neighborhood cleaning store, you know, and I show them this, and it looks like I've dropped into a bucket of paint. You know, it's dyed. One entire pants leg now is roughly, ledger blue. The other pants leg is still roughly olive green, but it was beginning to soak into that area, too, by now, with this magic elixir. So I showed it to the guy, and he says, oh, well, this is no good, no good, no good. We can't do nothing about this. I said, what do you mean, nothing? It's just a spot, just a little ink. He said, oh, no. It doesn't come out now. It doesn't come out. He says, look, watch. It's getting green, purple, yellow. He goes, oh, look, see, it takes the color right out. He said, take the color. Can't take it out of that. I said, what do you mean? This is supposed to be, you know, that new fabric. He says, oh, forget it. Well, that's the first time I ever wore a three-day-old suit to grease my car with. From that time, and it was always the thing I wore under the car, you know, pulling back. So, you know, I think a little realism. Speaking of realism in advertising, it comes in many, many forms. Have you seen the spaghetti ads? Of course, this is all part of the changing sex problem in America, the changing roles, identity, and all the rest of it. It must have been for about a month, I was watching these commercials. And it was Mueller's commercials there. And Mueller's commercial had this little kids, and their kid, you know, there's all these kids, and they're singing, you see, one. And the kids are singing about making spaghetti with mother. Well, obviously, a lot of working ladies got very mad at that one. You know, a lot of modern, present-day mothers got bugged about that thing, and a lot of kids couldn't relate to it either. So now the kids sing about making spaghetti with daddy. And apparently that'll be a more successful commercial. We are making spaghetti, mananata, with daddy. You know, that kind of thing. I would say a good 60% of the husbands that I know, and I know several husbands, do the cooking in the pad. Oh, yeah. I'm talking about husbands under 40. I'd say a good 60% of them do the cooking. Really. And it's all on a basis, yes, it's on the basis that the chick says, well, you know, I work and you work and there's no point, you get home earlier, that kind of stuff. Oh, sure. And so they've taken to, you know, it's no unusual thing to see two young account executives arguing over what cake mix is the best. And they don't even have those accounts. They're just really arguing over what cake mix is the best. They're serious about it, you know. So, oh, yeah, look at me. Say, really, really? Did you hear the other commercial? I heard a commercial that scared it scared me. Commercial. I'm listening to this one, and here is this lady, because she's going, ta-ta-ta-ti-ti-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta. You hear she's doing something. Well, you know, you figure she's doing a lady thing. Well, what would you think? You know, she's like, she's making a doily, or, you know, she's getting rid of Germ City or something, you know. She's doing something that we know ladies do. And she's going, ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta. And then you hear this other voice of this distinguished-sounding shrafty lady comes in. She says, oh, Emily, what are you doing, for heaven's sakes? And the second voice comes in, and she goes, da, da, da. Oh, she says, oh, Marge, I'm so glad I'm having so much fun. I'm spreading asphalt on our driveway. Yeah, she's putting asphalt on the driveway. She says, so this is the new quickie asphalt that goes on, the quickie on. And it's so much fun. I'm spreading. She never mentions where her old man is. I mean, why isn't he out putting asphalt on the driveway? He's in making the doilies, I'm sure. He's getting the cake mix on the oven. And she's out spreading asphalt on the driveway. Yeah, the whole commercial is about how this lady is out putting this new asphalt on the driveway. She's paving the driveway. And the other one says, here, let me do it a little while. And the next thing you know, we fade out as the two ladies are getting ready to pave the Grand Concourse. Well, now... I don't know, and they were trying to be funny. This is kind of threw me there, you know. And there's one, of course, it's beginning to come out in many ways. There's one ad for a car that, in fact, is in the current issue. I think it's either Time or Life. It shows the front end of a car, and it shows a man. The first scene shows a man sitting at a bus stop. And the man is sitting there. Obviously, he's going to work. He's looking a little worried. He's sitting there looking down at the bus stop. And he's looking off to the left there, waiting for the bus. And it says, Mr. Smithers, I'm paraphrasing, says, poor old Mr. Smithers, he bought a car to use to go to work, but now look at this. And the next scene you see down below is the woman. and you see the front end of his car coming out of the page right at you, and you see his wife sitting there looking absolutely arrogantly American housewifey, you know, that kind of snotty raised head look, and you know, she's just come from, and you see the back seat of the car is piled up with hats. It's got all these little striped hat boxes and all that stuff. And she is on her way to do whatever it is she's doing. And whatever it is obviously far more important than poor old Charlie going to work. And it shows her going. And underneath it, it says, yes, Charlie went around and he looked at all the cars. And he decided on this great automobile, has these fantastic features. And it says, now, strange thing we'd like to ask you. How would we design a car if we designed a car for a lady? Absolutely designed one for a woman. No other concern in mind. That's right. That's exactly what we've done. Poor Charlie, he's sitting on the bus stop there waiting on the, and somehow this ad was one of the, well, really a scary ad, you know, it really scary, and it's supposed to be one of those cheery little whoopee modern life type ads, you know, where all the aggressive ladies somehow are the intelligent ladies and all. And it was so cute. You know what I mean? It's like taking a major sorrow that many men have in their lives and making it a cutie pie thing. You know, a cutie pie. I could just see, you know, how many men, somehow, if you get Norman Rockwell to do the ad, or if you go down to Young and Rubicam and get a lot of fun models to do it, somehow the very thing that bugs people turns out to be fun. I've been, you know, really, I've been, a lot of women are saying, Charlie, why are you always yelling at me because you never get a chance to use a car, and I always use the car because it's so important for me to get to the PTA before Mrs. Bruner gets there. And you know how Mrs. Bruner is. She always takes the front parking lot there, right there by the door. And I always have to get, now, why are you always complaining? Now, look at this. Now, look at how good-humoredly he's taking it in the ad. yeah, I know, all right, so I'm rotten, all right. And then there was another one today that I heard, a little scary one. It shows a guy, this is another radio spot, and the guy is talking to his friendly, have you ever found, in recent times, a friendly service station operator? You know those friendly service station operators that are always smiling out of the TV commercials? It shows them checking your battery acid. Have you ever asked one to check your battery acid? Have you ever asked one even to wipe off your windshield? Yeah, you know, it shows them at the big grin, you know, and all the little girls are going off to the little girls' room and everyone's so happy. It's just like it's kind of like your neighborhood fun spot is your local friendly service station. Everyone just can hardly wait to get there. And, you know, this one even showed the guy getting the back seat vacuumed out. Try that one someday on the turnpike, you know. Vacuum out my back seat, Mac. It hit you in the mouth. And well, anyway, these wonderful little fantasies that they put on the commercial. This one, the guy was talking to the service station operator, and he was saying, "Well, what do you mean?" And the guy says, "Yes, sir. The new SPI oil derivative, which we add to your engine, gives you 47% new life to your engine. It is a derivative and a top oil and it is also an upper lube." And you know, he goes into this discussion about how you should put this oil in your car, and how the new cars get it. And he says, "Say, that sounds like a good idea. Give me a can of upper lube or whoopee." And the guy says, "All right, sir." And then for the first time you hear, "Oh, darling, oh, tell him to give you two cans of upper lube or whoopee." He says, "Why? What, don't you remember? I have a car too." Oh, gee, come on. Then you know, oh, crying out. Now, the guy's cut down to size every time he turns around. Then there's another one, another little jazz-a-rooney that kind of got me, is the great one for the tires. Have you heard that one? Oh, that's that one. Of course, one of the modern myths that is constantly running through American fiction and through American television is Daddy as a numbskull. This could be called the Dagwood Bumstead syndrome. A daddy as lovable numbskull, mommy as fix-it, as Miss Fix-It, you know, she's official, she's beautiful, she's young, she's everything. She's all. She controls the family and gets it underway. Of course, mommy has been supplanted by big sister. who is 17. She is the new Blondie. I wonder how many people have recognized that, that Mommy is now becoming more of a bumbling Latter-day Saint. Mommy is now more like Faye Bader now. She's not quite so much like Blondie, and it's the young daughter in the household who cures all. It's a Haley Mills syndrome, you know? And an old friendly, bumbling Fred McMurray is Daddy. I said, yeah, you know, he's kind of nice, but he gets confused and the ballpoint pen falls apart and he forgets the passport and he doesn't know how to talk French and he tries to pretend that he does. He walks and all that kind of stuff. So here is this great little commercial with Daddy as numbskull is beginning to enter now into the world of commerce. You hear the sound like this, that you hear the daughter and the mommy talking, and dad and mommy says, how do you think we'll get them to do it? And the daughter says, well, I guess we'll have to fool them. That's what we'll have to do. You know how Daddy is. He's so bullheaded. And mommy says, all right, dear, let's do that. Let's fool them. Let's fool them that way. And then you hear, bruh! You hear the car coming in the driveway. And you hear Daddy suddenly enter the scene. And mommy says, Daddy, Gloria has been telling me that all the kids at school have the new golden inner seal puncture-proof double eagle tires. Why don't you have the new puncture-proof double golden eagle inner seal tires? Oh, what do you mean? I just go out and buy tires. I don't know nothing about tires. Well, Daddy, Mommy says, and the next thing you know, Daddy says, gee, is that right, tires? There's some kinds of tires that are puncture-proof? And Mommy is saying, why, yes, Gloria. And then Gloria says, yes, Daddy, the new Double Eagle, blah, 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 puncture-proof. I read it all about it in Life magazine. Well, of course, that takes care of Daddy. I mean, poor old Daddy's been fixing flats since he was 8. Daddy knows all about getting his thumbnail ripped off trying to take a tire off in the middle of the dark out there on the Jersey Turnpike. But that doesn't matter. Daughter says, I read about it in Life magazine, Daddy. And that's enough to put Daddy in his... He says, wowie, that's true. Let's go to our double-lever dealer now. And the whole family is off to get a set of snow tires. This is Daddy as the bungler. Daddy, of course, plays a great deal of bungling roles in the TV or the radio spots about various condiments. Have you heard Daddy the other day? Daddy is always standing next to the barbecue grill, and another Daddy is saying, "Hey Jack, come on, will you quit fooling around? We got to get these steaks done. We got to get these steaks done." And the other guy says, hey, Harry, what are you putting on those steaks? Gee whiz, wow. I don't know. I think we ought to go down into the restaurant and get steaks because, gee whiz, wow, I don't think you can. What are you putting on them steaks? Why, I am putting MSG on these steaks. Yes, sir, accent. Don't tell Marge. She'll wonder. This is my little secret on how I can cook such great steaks. Don't tell Marge. I buy it in the new big 17-pound can. Yeah, wowee! Oh, wow! And these two guys are remarking over something like accent, you see. This is a big deal with the two guys. Don't you guys wish you could get so excited over tomato paste? You guys out there? Wouldn't life be a lot more fun if you could really get involved over ketchup? Hey, Charlie, what kind of ketchup is this? Wowee! And those great non-conversations that men are always having in these radio commercials about non-conversational topics. I'd love to be able to have one of those nice friendly discussions over cigarettes. How long has it been since you've heard two guys say, say, Fred, you know, I'm getting so tired of the taste of my cigarette. I don't know what it is. I'm getting so tired of the taste of my cigarette. Here, Charlie, try one of these. Yes, sir. Explodos. Try one of these with the new golden filter, double action, triple whammy filter. Try one of these. Just give them a little try. Say, by George, you're right. They are cooler and milder and greater, and already my lungs are feeling... yeah, my cough is gone. Wow. Say, won't it be wonderful when I tell the gang at the beach about this? Yes, have you made the switch, too? The announcer comes in. I love these little conversations. I'd like to have one. I tried to have one the other day with Zajac. I said to Zajac, Zajac, have you tried the new one-calorie tab? And he went, ugh. Oh, come on, Eddie. Come on, I want to have a little fun like the guys in the commercials do. What about you, Al? Why can't I get you involved in a discussion of V7 with the Vitalis? Come on, we can talk about that, you know. Yeah, that's right. Is there anybody here who wants to try a little greasy kid stuff? I would love to stand next to Leader, you know, in the executive washroom and say, Leader, are you still using that greasy kid stuff? Come on. Why don't you try the stuff that us guys on the air try? All of us guys who work the microphones. Here, give me your comb. Here, try this now, Leader. Try it here. See, watch. Just run it through your hair. See, you can still see the grease. Greasy kid stuff. Here, try this one now. Do it the 60-second instant workout, and there. And then Leader and I, you know, there's the next shot of Leader and I walking into Dunn Hall, you know, to lay in a couple of scotches, you know. I says, yes, all you youngsters that are trying it, greasy kid stuff. I'd love to have that kind of conversation. I really would. You know, I would just like to have one bit of realism. One guy, he says, say, Charlie, are you still using your greasy kid stuff? And Charlie turns to him and says, mind your own damn business. He says, well, no, I'm a greasy kid. And the next thing you know, bang, he gets one in the mouth. Greasy kid stuff, huh? Oh, gee, you know, I just, it's a life in the ad world has its own charm. And I notice now they're making a concerted effort to get masculine-looking guys to drink the beer. Have you noticed that? And they're very camera-shy, you know. These are models that have not worked since the late 30s. And now all of a sudden they're running around on the bowling alley. You know, they're trying to show that it isn't just the guys with the fluffy pink sweaters and with the tall, thin, stainless steel girls who drink beer. It's just these ordinary, real guys. And they look very embarrassed, you know. They're sitting around there. And wouldn't you love to have those kind of commercials or the kind of world? Wouldn't you like to go to just one of those parties that the people in the Rheingold spots are having? Wouldn't you like to go to just one of those Ballantine parties? Just once, you know, everybody's running around with a guitar and a banjo, and they keep jumping up and down, and everybody has this ecstatic look when they pour them a beer, and hey, you know, they get that big grin. I'd love to live like that once. Have you ever seen that gang on the boat, the fishing boat? That gang with the, you know, the gang that are out there fishing, and they've got the big can, the big thing full of beer. Wouldn't you love to go on a party boat like that once, you know? When everybody's running around with a beer and yelling and hollering and the music is going and everyone's pouring and the fish, everything is fun, you know, it's very fun. Everything is fun all the way down the line. It's all pure fun and a yard wide and about 40 feet deep. In fact, it's up to my bloomin' knickers now. Already, it's up to my bloomin' knickers.